This is OPB Radio, and I'm Christian Fodenvenzel. Dr. Mel Cohen, the state epidemiologist at the Oregon Public Health Division, has raised the specter of new diseases turning up here as the climate changes. He held a panel recently with politicians, county health department experts, and other health policy wonks to discuss the issue. I asked him why.
This is National Public Health Week, and the theme of Public Health Week, again, nationally this year, is climate change and public health. The issue is that while there's been a lot of work around modeling what's happening to our climate around the world, you know, how many inches the ocean levels might rise or how much the ice shelf might be melting and collapsing and so forth, there's been relatively little discussion that's very specific about the health effects that all of this is going to bring for us.
Well, tell me, is there a link between climate change and health in Oregon, and what kind of diseases are we talking about?
There's a long list, and let me go through it with you. The first area that I noted in my presentation was heat waves. We know that we are going to see more heat waves and probably longer heat waves, and heat waves have substantial health effects. The increased mortality that comes from heat waves has been documented in a number of cities around the world. And so this is something that we do need to prepare for, because there are things that people can do, that communities can do, to protect themselves in times of heat stress like that. Vector-borne diseases is another area. There was a famous outbreak that you may remember from some years back, I think about 10 or 12 years ago, actually more than that, maybe 15 years ago, in the Four Corners area in the southwest of hantavirus. What happened there was that there was a very abundant rainfall, and this led to a very robust harvest of pinion nuts. It turns out that deer mice feed on pinion nuts. It's their primary source of food. And so when there were a lot more pinion nuts around, there were a lot more deer mice around. Now, deer mice also harbor this particular deadly virus. And so with a lot more mice around, this meant that people were a lot more likely to come in contact with these mice and with the virus. And that's essentially what led to this outbreak of hantavirus. So that's an example of how a change in the climate leads to a change in a disease vector. Exactly what those vectors are going to be in Oregon, it's difficult to predict because there are a lot of different inputs into those kinds of systems. But we need to be able to recognize when something new arrives and then to mount an appropriate response. So that's the vector-borne disease piece of this. Asthma and allergies is another area where there are some changes. For example, we know that some of the chemicals in the atmosphere, like ozone, with climate change, with global warming, are going to be more prevalent. Those are very potent asthma triggers. We also know that allergies, many of the things that cause allergies, grow very well under conditions of high carbon dioxide. For example, ragweed, poison ivy. These plants like high carbon dioxide levels and warmer temperatures. And so it's likely that we're going to be seeing more of those diseases in our communities here in Oregon as the climate changes.
State epidemiologist Dr. Mel Cohen raised the concern of the effect of climate change on local diseases as part of National Public Health Week. Oregon is shortening the distance from home to the doctor's office for parents. That's because the state is opening a new school-based health clinic. April Baer visited Tigard High School and files this report.
A high school may seem like a funny place for a doctor's office, but the person who's going to be running this health center says there's good reason to put one here.
I think high schoolers like to not be noticed. They like to fade into the woodwork.
Margaret Stachowski is the resident nurse practitioner at the new health center.
They're really not interested in going with their parents for health care, and so they tend not to access care, and they tend to keep to themselves just by the nature of who they are.
Stachowski hopes to tease those teens out of the woodwork. Her clinic goes way beyond the school nurse's office that you may remember. She and her staff will provide nearly any service you'd get from a doctor's office, except birth control. They'll give physicals and immunizations. They can prescribe meds for a sore throat or an earache. She says they'll even do some mental health care.
High schoolers, particularly in this age group, have a lot of anxiety and depression-related health care issues. Headaches, stomach pains, they have anxiety attacks, heart palpitations, things that cause kids to think that they're having heart problems. So there's a lot of problems that are just related to being a teenager.
If it turns out these symptoms are warning signs for mental illness, Stachowski's in a position to help. Governor Ted Kulongoski attended yesterday's clinic opening. He called it an appropriate merge of physical and mental health care and a step toward one of his second-term priorities.
Before I leave office, I want every child in Oregon to have access to health care.
Kulongoski mentioned his efforts to get more kids on the Oregon Health Plan and promised additional money for children's care over the next 2 years. He repeated a promise to work for coverage of all kids, funded by a higher tobacco tax. Amid the applause, Kulongoski noted previous tussles over this issue, which voters rejected when it appeared as Measure 50.
My view of the last election cycle on this is that was the first round. This is a 15 or 12-round fight today, and we're going to stay at this until we accomplish it.
The Tigard High School Clinic is one of 46 in the state, spread across 19 counties. 17 more should be open by the end of next year. April Baer, OPB News.
Democratic Senator Barack Obama will receive two key political endorsements today as the battle for Oregon's primary voters heats up. Ethan Lindsay reports.
Governor Ted Kulongoski has already endorsed Hillary Clinton. He's traveled with the New York senator, and perhaps more importantly, he's a superdelegate, meaning he has a key vote at the Democrats' nominating convention. Barack Obama has an Oregon superdelegate of his own, Congressman Earl Blumenauer. And now the Illinois senator's campaign says he will receive high-profile endorsements from two popular former Oregon governors, John Kitzhaber and Barbara Roberts. The Democratic presidential candidates both appeared in Oregon in recent weeks, and most observers expect them to return soon. Even though the state's May primary is one of the last in the country, many voters cast their ballots early because Oregonians vote by mail. April 29th is the last day for Oregon's voters to register, and the Secretary of State's office says it will mail ballots out in the first week of May. Ethan Lindsay, OPB News.
Tight water supplies are nothing new to Oregonians east of the Cascades, but according to recent studies, water is starting to get increasingly tight across western Oregon as well, particularly in wine country. Limited water supplies have already caused friction between growing cities and farms, and those conflicts have the potential to flare up in earnest as growth pressures increase. Rob Manning has more on the brewing water wars in Oregon's wine belt.
It's a little hard to believe there could be water shortages in an area that averages 42 inches of rain a year. But a new study in Yamhill County shows that water in reservoirs and aquifers will fall short in cities like Dundee, maybe as soon as 2010. Rob Dakin is Dundee's city manager. He says the inability to guarantee water and sewer service is stopping development on the riverside of the city.
That property will not be able to develop until, of course, we be able to provide that sewer service as well as water in the future. So we know that we have dressed the sewer already and are proceeding with plans. Water is a little bit more difficult.
Dakin says city leaders had assumed for years that they would get water by just continuing to drill wells in the surrounding area. But all of a sudden, test wells started showing problems.
Our engineers came back and said, no, do not drill wells. It's not cost effective. You're not going to be able to appreciably provide the kind of water you need.
The situation is not a whole lot better just southwest of Dundee in the town of Dayton. Sam Sweeney has farmed outside Dayton for years. He says in that time, urban development has crept closer and closer.
That area used to be fields across the road, and over the last 15 or 20 years, it's developed into, it's been absorbed into the city.
As developments like the one across the street from Sweeney's farm exploded, Dayton was doing what Dundee had tried, getting water from farmland. Only this time, the farmers fought back.
Ag was going to lose this water source. And it was all going to go for municipal use, which they didn't think was fair. that agriculture land should be providing water for municipal use. And so there was a lawsuit.
That legal decision limited the number of wells that Dayton and nearby Lafayette could dig. The cities are now at that legal limit. Sue Hollins has been Dayton's city manager for the last 15 years. She says her town has nearly doubled in population in that time.
It's just that it's not stopping. People are wanting to come to live in the smaller communities because they're cheaper. You feel safer. And so it's not going to stop anytime soon.
The story is similar in a number of towns across Yamhill County, where once quiet farming and logging towns are becoming bedroom communities for Portland and Salem. As the population grows, water gets scarce. That's why Yamhill County Commissioner Kathy George launched a water task force and a water supply study.
I think that it's going to be helpful to everybody if we can find some sorts of ways to, you know, maximize the amount of water that we get and are able to share if needed.
George says the county might provide some financial help in the future. Not everyone's waiting, though. Dundee City Manager Rob Dakin says when his city learned it couldn't drill for water, it settled on two options. One was to get water from nearby cities.
Or to perhaps using our surface water right we have in the Willamette right now to treat water, much like Wilsonville does, to provide that long-term water need.
Dakin says Dundee could build the $5 million-plus treatment plant on its own, but since other cities are facing shortages too, he wants to see if they want in on the project too. Dayton City Manager Sue Holland says her town is looking into that very option.
I think our cheapest, fastest, and most effective way is going to be a regional water supply, depending on the Willamette.
Both city managers say that the larger city of McMinnville could get involved, too. Water shortages are two decades away in McMinnville, and utility officials there were cautious about what steps they might take. Back on Sam Sweeney's farm, the idea of getting water from the Willamette River and piping it a half dozen miles from Dundee seemed too expensive and politically unpopular to survive. He says he's got a better idea.
I would think the way that agriculture should view this is the rural towns should be kind of curtailed in their growth, and the cities and towns that have the water and the infrastructure, maybe they're the ones that would be better off to serve the municipal needs, and they're the ones that should grow.
City and county officials say that limiting growth is legally difficult and might increase housing costs, among other concerns. Regional water projects could offer the solution since they would spread out the financial burden. County officials say they might be able to provide more money, but Yamhill County Commissioner Kathy George says that might not be enough. Conservation steps and help from the state and federal government might be needed, too, to keep the water running. Rob Manning, OPB News.
The state of Washington is defending a deal it cut with Central Washington County over drinking water wells. The agreement allows wells to continue to be drilled pending the outcome of a study. That study will determine if a proliferation of wells in Kittitas County is taking water from downstream farmers. Derek Sanderson is with the Washington Department of Ecology. He says his agency rejected the idea of a moratorium on wells because it was too heavy-handed.
We need to find ways in which we can respect the county's land use authority and for them to respect our need to make sure that we're ensuring, you know, adequate protection and management of our water supplies.
But water watchdogs say the agreement doesn't do enough to protect farmers and others who hold senior water rights in the Yakima Basin. The Center for Environmental Law and Policy says Ecology should have imposed a moratorium on new wells because water is so scarce in that part of Washington state.